entertain you on a giant screen with a few colorful motion pictures you've been hearing about and reading
about. It's showtime, folks. Enjoy the show.
We're delighted to have you with us.
The Drive-In Theater.
You'll find something to please you to add to your evening's enjoyment.
It's pleased to bring you our Fifi feature presentation.
What's up, everybody? It is 8 o'clock. It is Monday night. You are tuned in live, maybe, or you're listening to the recorded podcast of the Drive-In Speaker Box. I'm your host, Bo, the boom operator.
I'm the grip.
And, yeah, we're here. We're streaming on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch. If you want to follow us on there, get along in the comments with everybody that's already been in our Twitch pre-show. If you follow us over on Twitch or subscribe, which is awesome, you can get some extra content where we just shoot the shit with you guys, and it's a lot of fun. So join us over there, or just download this podcast wherever it is you download podcasts. But for the next hour, we're going to be talking to you about movies. We do this every week, and we tell you what's coming out this week, what came out last week, what made money, what didn't, what's new in development, what we saw, what we didn't see, and what you thought about it and what we thought about it. So this week we didn't really get a chance to go see any brand new movies.
The
Boy Kills World, which I didn't get a chance to see because I just didn't have time, and I chose to see the 25th anniversary of The Mummy.
Yeah, I think the tennis sex movie was
Challengers,
the only new
one. So going to be talking about that The Mummy in a little while and what's coming out this week. But it was a weekend movies, and you know, there's always new stuff that happens. There's always new news to talk about. Ghibli Fest is kicking off at theaters maybe near you. If you guys don't get on board with Studio Ghibli Fest, it's a really, really good time. They just did Spirited Away. That was this week's. Mm-hmm. And I think that'll run for, 2 weeks? And they're going to do another one. I forget what this summer schedule looks like.
Yeah, it's either they get three or four showings each. And it's usually a split between sub and dub. You should watch the subtitled rather than the dubbed ones. They're much better.
But in other news, it has been a week. Did you hear about this thing on Netflix that they're talking about? The Scooby-Doo live-action drama series?
I caught a little glimpse that there was going to be... there's talkings of a Scooby-Doo TV series.
Well, Greg Berlanti, who's kind of behind the Arrowverse, he's one of the Arrowverse people, is kind of backing this project, which I think is ridiculous. I don't know if I'm okay with do we need a live action Scooby-Doo more than the movies? How do you feel about it, Jake? Do you like Scooby-Doo movies?
The movies? Like the live action? No, not the live action. I like all of the old, older Scooby-Doo movies, or like some of the new ones. I've seen parts of it, like Scooby-Doo meets the WWE or whatever, and then like Scooby-Doo hangs out with Kiss and all that.
Yeah.
Those are pretty rad.
When Scooby-Doo met Kiss, did they re-meet the Phantom of the Park? Because that seemed like it would have been a good animated.
I haven't watched the whole movie, but I have seen the ending where Kiss uses their superpowers and like helps Scooby-Doo.
It's like a magic gang, spaceship that they ride or whatever.
Yeah, I
don't know. Also in the news, I thought this was pretty funny, and this was actually shared by one of our people in the Discord, but I also noticed this. The Russo brothers talking about how Marvel isn't out of touch. It's just the generational divide. It's not that people have... book fatigue. It's just the kids.
They said they don't believe in the comic book fatigue. They don't believe that that's real. There's just no way. People are definitely still interested in seeing Marvel release after Marvel release after Marvel release.
How unbelievably
what's wild about that is like...
I just can't even put that into words, how... they're out of touch.
Comic book readers don't even keep comic books. Like, they don't keep interest in comic books and stuff, which is why they always do so many resets and story change-ups and kill people off and things like that to try and attract readers, because things like Guardians of the Galaxy has failed multiple times over and over again. Things like Blade has gone away time and time again. You know, there's... comics have a hard time holding their inherent, like their built-in audience, the people that they're aimed for. There's no way that making them into movies is going to keep that audience that loses interest in the source material already, in addition to all of the casual fans coming in that are just there to see some sort of, you know, I don't know, cinematic spectacle. You know, there's no way. There's absolutely comic book fatigue out there, because it's all just becoming the same thing, and they see it over and over again, and it's tough to watch, you know, Batman's parents get shot 24 times. It's tough to watch Uncle Ben or hear about Uncle Ben being killed 24 times over in multiple different universes. You know, it's tough to give a crap about what multiverse spin is being put on comic books to justify your dumbass story, regardless if Wolverine is stabbing Deadpool in the dick with his claws or not. You know, it's like, it's too difficult to keep up with. You're going to feel like you have to have seen everything to stay part of it, and its relevancy is going to fall off, and people are going to be tired of it, because I haven't watched any of the Disney Plus stuff. And
I stopped watching all that.
The Deadpool trailer, it's like, I definitely feel like I need to know what's going on with Disney Plus to have an idea of why any of this matters. So, yeah, comic book fatigue is a real thing, for sure. There's no way that...
Well, too much of anything fatigue is a real thing. Like, I don't understand how they don't think this applies to comic books. Nobody wants... just constant one of the same thing. Like, eventually, I mean, we're going to get tired of it.
Yeah, even Disney was like, ooh, maybe we've thrown way too much friggin' Star Wars at people and need to tone it down
a
touch.
Just a second.
And then after they said that, they didn't. And, like, immediately put out these trailers. And people are just like, no, this trailer looks bad. This character looks dumb.
Just please stop.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. But speaking of completely new... completely original, completely just from the drawing board content. The new film Apartment 7A is coming to... they finally, you know, they've been talking about this since 2022, is finally coming to Paramount Plus this fall. And if you don't know what Apartment 7A is, it's a Rosemary's Baby prequel for all of the people that were just clamoring for more 1968 Rosemary's Baby universe, you know, for all of those people that were such big fans of the 1968 classic Rosemary's Baby that just needed more expansion into the lore.
Yeah, like, how was this cult even formed, man?
Yeah, it's like, you know, and he, as a guy who absolutely loves Rosemary's Baby, that is a good, fantastic movie about, you know, culty bad guys, right? But also with a problematic director, you know, Rosemary's Baby, Rosemary's Baby is interesting because it's one of those movies where we all acknowledge it's a really badass horror movie, and in a world where we're so quick to cancel people for their past transgressions. But Roman Polanski directed this, and Roman Polanski is like not even allowed in the U.S. because he like fucks teenagers or whatever, you know, and he's married to, you know, some Lolita or whatever. And, you know, and everybody knows it, but goddamn, Rosemary's Baby is a good ass movie. You know, Pirates is a good ass movie with Walter Matthau, but we're going to go ahead and make a prequel, and it's called Apartment 7A, and it's coming out this fall. It's a thing, and it's for whatever reason we needed that, because we didn't have enough Rosemary's Baby fatigue, unlike the Marvel fatigue that we've got. But that's coming out. What you got on your paper?
Well, you know what? We got a couple of trailers released for things that also people probably don't need. Another one of the Disney properties turned horror movie, Little Mermaid.
Yep, the, saw that.
The Murder Maid trailer is out. And then also the Mufasa Lion King prequel has its trailer that's out now, so that you can watch how young Mufasa he comes to the Pride Lands or whatever dumbass storyline that they have in mind for this. Also, just keep the Disney horse crap train rolling. Jeff Bridges is going to somehow make a return in Tron 3.
So, well, just CGI, I guess.
Yeah, know. Tron 3 Ares. Jeff Bridges, in an interview with Film Comment, said that he will be in the movie in some capacity. That is yet to be revealed. I mean, I don't know if they're going to bring Clue back.
Watch it just be like a picture of him on the wall.
Yeah, something like
see,
that.
See, he was in there. Told you.
They killed him off in the second one. And then they have, they made him Clue, but they killed Clue.
It was no so, Tron 2.
Yeah, dude, Tron 2 is bad. Hey, it made for a good soundtrack, and that's all that really matters was honestly. That Daft Punk had a new album thanks to Tron 2.
Cool. It inspired everybody to put EL Wire in their clothing, and then the Tron 2 soundtrack was cool. Derezzed.
Yeah, I'm not exactly jazzed about a Tron 3 because Tron 2 was just one of the biggest disappointments. And like, wow, the CG is incredible. It's insanely lifelike. And then Clue's like plastic face.
It's me, Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
Not good.
It was so bad.
I look just like the other Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
No.
So we'll see how that goes.
I wanted people in like light up black light spandex suits running around. Like that's what I wanted, you know?
Well, they brought him into the real world at the end of the movie.
I know.
So who knows? Maybe that's how it is. They run a fashion company. They bring Tron fashion to the real world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just want to, like, remember Reboot? That
yeah,
CGI
absolutely
show?
Absolutely.
That's what we
Reboot.
Like, Reboot was better than Tron 2. Reboot was cool, man.
Reboot rules.
Like hexadecimal and, like, the, you know.
Yeah, Megabyte.
Megabyte.
Cool and stuff. I forget what the kid's name is, but his future self that comes back with the beard and the eye patch, and he's just, like, the coolest dude.
Dude.
Yeah. Reboot was rad. Cool. You know what, too? More Disney stuff here. Their partner in Marvel, I guess Marvel stuff. Kraven has been delayed. It's been
what?
It's been pushed back another 4 months, and that is so that it can take the slot that was occupied by the new Karate Kid movie that's planned. And that movie's been pushed back because the Cobra Kai final season has been delayed again. So,
oh, I forgot that there was another season of Cobra Kai
coming.
Yeah,
so we're still waiting on that final season 6 of Cobra Kai. And with that, they pushed back the release of the Karate Kid movie, which is a sequel to all of the Karate Kid movies.
Because but it will hopefully actually be about a kid doing karate?
It has Daniel-san and Jackie Chan's character meeting.
Okay.
So that it's a sequel to all the Karate Kid movies.
Okay.
It's the
well, and honestly,
Miyagi side and the Jackie Chan movie
that is not karate coming, at all, coming but together. Kung Fu and karate meeting. Yeah. I am hopeful because the way that they handled Cobra Kai gets a pass. It gets a pass. I accept it. I really enjoyed Cobra Kai. I continue
Cobra Kai
to enjoy
fun.
Cobra Kai.
Because Johnny's so cool.
Because everybody's so cool.
That's
like,
true.
Like, you know, they even the made Chosen cool. a cool guy. And, like, Chosen was the
he
biggest...
He was a butthole.
Yeah, he was the biggest wanker of the whole series. And then they made him cool. And it's like, they're making everybody cool. Okay, I'll give it a pass.
Yeah, everyone except for the kids in the series.
Yeah, they
the
all
kids
suck.
In the series suck, but like all the old ones coming back.
The like 14-year-old that gets a hawk tattooed on his back. Like, what? Yeah. Come on. Like, don't you have to be 18 for that?
Yeah, he does, but he did it anyhow because he was cool. So, yeah, Kraven's now taking its spot, which means that Venom 3 is going to be Sony's next Marvel release. That one's scheduled for this October.
What is that movie even going to be about?
I don't know. I still haven't watched the second one.
I watched the second one. It had the Woody Harrelson carnage in it. And it was... There was a lot going on. Like, it wasn't unenjoyable, but it also was... I mean, that's the thing with the Venom movies. You don't really need to know or ever remember what happened in the movie. You're just kind of along for the ride, which I guess has its merits. But do we need a third one?
Well, this one's called The Last Dance. So maybe...
Oh, I'm sure it is.
So Venom's going to be released, October 25th, and then Kraven coming in December 13th. Yes. Okay. And then Karate Kid will be sometime next year after we get our final season of Cobra Kai. Also delayed, Fast and Furious 11. Pushed back again for the same reasons that they said that Cobra Kai is delayed, which has now delayed everything else, which is the strikes, the Hollywood strikes. They have not begun filming Fast and Furious yet, but in a interview with Comic Book Reader, Tyrese Gibson said that it got pushed back. They have more delays.
Tyrese said.
Yeah. And that the plan is they start filming at the very beginning of next year. So sometime January or February, they're set to start filming the final Fast and Furious movie. And the article I was reading
wasn't the last one called Last in the Furious?
No, it was...
When are we going to get Last in the Furious?
It was just Fast 10.
Fast 10, your seatbelts.
It was supposed to be Fast 10, your seatbelts, damn it, but they didn't do it.
Can we get Last in the Furious?
Maybe that's what this one will be. But they said that they're trying to find a... satisfying way to end the series. It's like you didn't help yourself last time because the end of the last movie is cliffhanger, and you're like, this is stupid.
Such a cliffhanger.
Yeah, and then they have The Rock come back and all that. So
Merle on Twitch says Past and the Furious, the prequel.
I'm sure a hard part of it's going to be getting everyone's work schedule. I mean, they got Momoa, they got The Rock, and then the whole cast of Fast and Furious already. But The Rock's going to be busy. He's posting behind the scenes.
Can we just get another Hobbs and Shaw? I mean, isn't that what we really just want?
That might be in the works. No one's saying they're not going to do
spin-offs.
We
just want more Jason Statham in The Rock. That's like really all we want.
They're just giving us more. This will be the end of the main line. I'm sure there's going to be more spin-offs. And they're probably going to find a way to take all those characters from the main line and spin them off too. Which, talking spin-offs that no one needs.
How have they not done a show? Why are they not doing a
show? They do. There's Netflix shows.
Are there?
Yeah.
Okay, I guess I just don't pay attention to that stuff.
Yeah. Spinoffs that no one really needs, there's going to be not one, but two Evil Dead spinoffs in the works. So a sequel to Evil Dead Rise, and then in addition to that, Sam Raimi's Ghost House Pictures is making another spinoff at the, somewhere around that same time. So there's going to be more than one Evil Dead spinoff, sequel, reboot, whatever.
Evil Dead stopped with Ash versus the Evil Dead. Mm-hmm. Like that was the most competent and tasteful, like, succession to the series that ever was. The new Evil Dead movie was like I said in my previous review when it came out in theaters, was a fine horror movie. A very fine horror movie. It was a terrible Evil Dead movie.
Yeah. Well, so the guy that did that, Sebastian Vanacek, mm-hmm. he's doing a sequel to that one, right? Continuing that. But they have another writer coming in, and they're doing a different spinoff. So it might be a more Ash in the Ash versus Evil Dead kind of a thing.
If better be. I know that Bruce Campbell, he can't keep doing character of Ash Williams, nor do we need him to. But the thing about the Evil Dead is it needs more comedy. It needs more tongue-in-cheek and not just tongues hanging out of cheeks. You know what I'm saying? Like, Evil Dead is not supposed to be something that is a truly frightening experience. It's supposed to be fun. And,
well, Yeah. Only because the first one didn't turn out the way they wanted.
And so they leaned into it, yeah. You know? And then that was what it established. It wasn't Evil Dead 1 that made that property famous. It was Evil Dead 2 that made it so successful. And then they leaned into it on Evil Dead 2. And then Army of Darkness was a straight-up comedy.
Yes.
And so was Ash vs. Evil Dead was a straight-up comedy. And, you know, taking it back to this, like, serious horror, like, you know, fingernails on chalkboard cringe level horror is like, that's not where it's kind of like Drag Me to Hell, which was another Sam Raimi like kind of fun horror movie. That movie is, it's got some spooky bits. It's not a scary movie. It's a gross out movie. There's a difference between gross out and scary horror, like gore, you know. Gross out was in Drag Me to Hell, like getting that stapler and hitting that lady in the face and like pus and boils and poop and dookie, and you're just like, ew, gross. And you're kind of laughing, like an eyeball flies out and lands in someone else's mouth, and you're like, ew. But like this new Evil Dead movie, it's like just straight up gore and terror, and that's not...
Yeah, I guess gross has more fun. Like, what's old Lord of the Rings dude, Peter Jackson's horror movie?
Yeah, he did that a long time ago.
The monkey from Skull Island that bites everyone.
Yeah, Dead Alive.
Yeah, Dead mm-hmm. Alive, yeah. That one's total just gross out because they put, like, the baby zombie in the blender.
Yeah, and the dude, like, puts a lawnmower strapped to his chest and, like, yeah. runs through the crowded room of zombies and just, like, mowing them down. And, you know, that's gross out. That's fun. But it's not, like, oh, horror gore. Like, I don't think Evil Dead is not horror gore to me. Like, if you go back and you watch Evil Dead 2 and even Evil Dead 1, like, even the most gory of parts were kind of silly, you know, and kind of fun. Like, with the snake head monster comes out and goes, ah, I'll swallow your soul, you know, and then gets her head popped out and the eyeball flies out. And, like, it's just stupid and kind of fun. Mm. It's not hyper-realistic, like... Your mom got turned into a zombie and then tried to boil your face. Like, that's yuck, man. Like, that's disturbing.
Well, so, yeah, you're probably getting another one of those because it was the most successful movie of the franchise.
I know.
And then hopefully the other writer will be providing us with, like, the actual Evil Dead true lineage, like... Sam Raimi style fun stuff.
Well, and I was on board with the Evil Dead remake when they pulled out the recording of them reading the Necronomicon, you know, and it's the same, the okay, here we go, like it's the reading of the Necronomicon, shit's gonna go, they're sticking with it. And then after the Deadites got released, nah man, wasn't an Evil Dead movie anymore. It was just a monster movie at that point. What else
I think that's the news here.
Okay, well, let's talk about what's coming out in theaters, because we got some stuff coming out in theaters this week. We've got a handful of stuff. There's one that's coming out in limited release this week that actually has been out for a little while in limited release, and it was you maybe have seen the trailer. It's the new Johnny Depp film where he plays the life of Jeanne Bécu, who is a... illegitimate daughter of an impoverished seamstress in 1743, went under rise of Court Louis the 15th and became the last official mistress. It's got Mai Nguyen and Johnny Depp. It's Jean Dubarry is the name of this movie. It's coming out. I want to say maybe Fathom Events is putting this out. Somebody's putting this out. But it will probably win a award for costuming because generally these kind of period pieces do. But yeah, it's been getting a lot of praise, a lot of press, and it should be hitting a theater somewhere near you, possibly. But that's coming out in the middle of the week. But coming out this weekend, which is, you know, this Friday, we've got a handful of movies coming out. We've got The Dragon Keeper, which is an animated film. You may have seen the trailers for it. It's kind of a Chinese dragon story. I don't know if it's going to get super wide release because it's from one of those foreign studios. I don't know exactly what production company is doing this, but it's not like DreamWorks or anything like that. But it'll probably come out because there's not a lot of kids movies right now in theaters. But then also for the horror fans, Tarot is coming out. You've probably seen the trailers for it. It's about a group of friends recklessly violating the sacred rule of tarot readings, and they unknowingly unleash an unspeakable evil trapped within these cursed cards. One by one, they come face to face with fate and end up in a race against death. And, looks pretty cut and paste. Horror movie formula. It's like, oh, we're a bunch of teenagers doing something we shouldn't, and we unlock a force that we can't control, and probably the one of the girls and the nerdy guy will survive, and to see another day. Formula. It's like Ouija, but with tarot, I guess. So that's coming out. It will make a lot of money because these movies tend to do. And then the larger release. This week is from David Leitch. It's The Fall Guy. I know I've seen the trailer to this about 100,000 times.
Dude, this movie advertisements have been everywhere.
Out of control. So many advertisements that I almost don't want to see it anymore. But it is starring Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling, among a bunch of other people coming into this. But it is about a stuntman finding the missing star of his ex-girlfriend's blockbuster film. Looks like a fun action comedy with two people that are very popular right now. And I feel like Ryan Gosling leaning into his more comedic side as of late is just, knocking people dead. So it's probably going to do extremely well. And it's from the director of Bullet Train, which I kind of liked Bullet Train.
And John Wick.
We both kind of liked Bullet Train.
He's a stunt man. The guy that's directing it,
yeah,
is a stunt man. So there you go.
So I think this. I want to see this
future TNT Sunday afternoon vacuuming fodder. Yeah.
Oh yeah, sure.
This would have been a dinner and a movie, beans and cornbread type thing. 100%. Definitely what it looks like. Yeah.
Yeah. So those are your movies that are coming out. There's a couple of limited release movies I'm not going to bother messing with, but. But that is what's coming out this week. And then we got a couple of big releases coming up in the next couple of weeks. But we will keep you posted on
this
those.
Saturday is also May the 4th. So
Star Wars Day.
Everyone can get your Star Wars on.
For those of you that still care about Star Wars. I feel like the Force is not as strong with us as it once was.
No.
Our midichlorian count is now very low.
Well, that's part of it. And yeah. Midichlorians was so stupid.
Yeah.
That was the beginning of the end.
So, yeah, if any of you guys are doing anything fun for Star Wars Day this coming weekend, tell us about it in our Discord. Don't forget to join our Discord. You can do that. It's in the comments. It's in the links. It's pinned before the end of the show. Our Twitch mod will throw that up there. Vince will give you the link. And we do little movie screenings on there, too. Which reminds me...
What did we pick?
That's right. For those of you that watch the show regularly, and for those of you that are on Twitch, we did a challenge. We put out a challenge for people to spend their challenge points. It was a 30-day challenge. They succeeded, and they got to choose a movie for us to watch and review, and we'll watch it on Discord at some time here pretty soon. But there was a poll on Discord. Everybody that threw in points got to submit a poll choice. And then the votes were in, and it looks like we're going to be watching and reviewing Waiting for Guffman. So Christopher Guest, I actually do kind of enjoy his movies. I don't necessarily like musicals. It's been a long time since I've seen Waiting for Guffman. Wildly popular poll. So, stay tuned for that. That'll be all on Discord. You'll get a chance to be a part of that. So more encouragement to jump out there and join in Discord. So, there you have it. That's what's coming out in theaters this week. That's what's happening with us. That's what's happening with the news. Let's talk about The Mummy.
Hold on.
What are we talking about?
Vince came in and said it might be changed to Best in Show or A Mighty Wind.
Why?
Just any pick Christopher Guest movie already. Like,
I mean, I actually kind of don't mind Best in Show or A Mighty Wind. A Mighty Wind works because I live in Fayetteville, Arkansas, and I live that. Like, Mighty Wind just happens outside. You step out. We have the Fayetteville Roots Festival, which doesn't happen. It was last year, but it was like walking onto the set of A Mighty Wind, you know? So I very much lived that world. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Yeah, I want to talk about The Mummy. I want to talk about The Mummy. You guys, The Mummy.
Well, tell us about
The Mummy, the 1999 classic.
25-year-old,
the 25th anniversary. Stephen Sommers, like, this guy does not get the credit he deserves for the movies that he's made because he's fucked up so many times since making The Mummy. You know, he's just, you know, this is a great movie. The Mummy's it's a great movie, guys. Mm-hmm. It's a perfect movie. Brendan Fraser, Rachel Weisz, it has everything. And one of the things, I have not seen this movie in a theater since I was a freaking kid, right? And I loved this movie then. I loved the Universal Studios roller coaster. I liked The Mummy Returns. The Mummy 3 with Jet Li, not so much, but, you know, we'll give it a pass. But Brendan Fraser was amazing. Rachel Weisz, I had the biggest crush on Rachel Weisz as a kid, you know, and probably still to this day. Arnold Vosloo, like, you know, being Imhotep. You've got Oed Fehr, like, as the cool guy with the shit on his face. I mean, there's just a lot to love in
cool
this movie.
Cool guy with the shit on his face.
Yeah, I mean, he was, like, the coolest, like... sandy, mysterious man from the dunes.
Yeah, the keeper. He was like the leader of the protectors of the tombs. Yeah,
he was so cool, man. And then the guy that played Benny, the like sneaky, like there's so many. This movie is like a pulp comic. It has Indiana Jones better than the last three Indiana Jones movies. You know, this movie is what Indiana Jones wanted to be, but could never really capture after The Last Crusade, right? And it is, as Dina says on Twitch, The Mummy provokes a lot of bisexual panic. I mean, because there's a lot of sexy stuff happening in this movie. You know, Brendan Fraser, totally sexy. Arnold Vosloo, totally sexy. Rachel Weisz, totally sexy.
His skin, Arnold Vosloo's skin is rotting off half of the movie.
Half the movie, but when he's like,
once
he's
full on
Imhotep, and then this little loincloth, and he's just like, Aksunamun, and you're just like, yeah, dude. Like, I want to be Aksunamun. And, you know, it was.
You want to be a Aksunamun?
I mean, to have a dude, like, it is kind of, what made this movie cool is they Dracula the mummy to make that story cooler than it was in the original, because, you know, the like the Bram Stoker Dracula is like, you know, love never dies. It's kind of like the thing. It's like, oh, you know, Mina, I'm so in love, blah, blah. And, you know, they were like, okay, well, how do we do that same romantic thing that this dude is willing to sort of forsake everything for this chick? You know, he's like, I'm gonna go against the pharaohs, I'm gonna go against religion, I'm gonna go against the dark arts, and this is my woman. And then, you know, he's like, I'm gonna get totally buried alive and mauled by scarabs, but death is only the beginning, you know, and
tongue cut out, wrapped alive,
and it's awesome,
fed to the flesh-eating scarabs.
And so you're like, oh man, that's sexy. But then you've got this other romance, which there's like two different romances happening in this movie. There's that, like, you know, lifelong, like, forbidden romance of Arnold, like Imhotep and Aksunamun. But then you've got Brendan Fraser and Rachel Weisz character, Rick and Evie, and it's like the gruff bad boy versus the like nerdy schoolgirl, and then all of a sudden you're like, I hate you so much, and then they like fucking make out at the end of the movie, and it's predictable, but it's comforting, and there's guns, and there's music, and there's travel and airplanes, and just like,
I was about to say, there's way more than just those two romances, because there's the romance of adventure that lures in everybody, and then there's the romance of the mystery of the Egyptian culture and discovering it, that all of the doctor dudes in the movie, which hire Rick and all of them to begin with there. So, I mean, it's like you know, it's a just a fantastical adventure movie.
I need to address a couple of comments. We got a comment from
Jonathan in love with himself.
Beelzebub Ding Dong says, "Dude, that movie was corny in the worst kind of way." And then Poochie Vance on Twitch says, "I think I got Fall Guy with The Mummy. To me, it was overhyped."
Man, so here's the thing: because when The Mummy came out, everyone loved it.
It's an adventure movie to its core. Of course it's corny. Like, that's a part of its charm. It's just like how Indiana Jones, when he punches, it sounds like someone just got hit with a sack full of bricks. And when his little pistol shoots, it sounds like a cannon. Like, it's corny in this way that the 1930s were corny. You know, it is supposed to be this larger-than-life, hyper-adventure that encapsulates a lot of this just over-the-top scenarios of both machismo and damsel in distress, but this movie balances it out in a way that the damsels are not completely helpless and the heroes are not completely invincible, and the score is great, the sets are great. It's just it's a movie. It's like a movie's movie. Yeah. And it's so much fun. And, you know, let me catch up over here in the, someone said Tom Cruise Mummy was better. No way. That Tom Cruise Mummy was terrible. The swipe cuts.
It's not that bad. The Tom Cruise Mummy is not that bad,
but not compared
to
this.
It's not anywhere near as good as this one.
Let's see. That's what it's in the worst way. You know, so this movie, it holds up pretty well, you know, it makes me want to go back and watch the third one, which I really didn't like, the Jet Li one. I don't remember much about it. And Scorpion King, I didn't like too much either.
Oh, Scorpion King rules.
And I feel that sometimes people, and I know that I'm gonna upset Jake here in just a moment, but I do feel that the Mummy franchise suffers in the same way that the original Conan movie suffers from its sequel. Like, the original Mummy is amazing. And everybody goes, but those movies are so corny, because they start thinking about the second one, the third one, and Scorpion King, and thinking that that's the first one. Just like in Conan, everyone starts thinking about Conan the Destroyer, which was not...
Conan the Destroyer is so good. What are you doing? What are you saying right now?
It's corny and hokey in a way that makes the first one not as great.
What are you talking about? There's more Mako. It has the cool thief dude. You get Grace Jones in there being awesome. You have Bombata. You have Sex Rhino Andre the Giant.
That's what I'm saying. It's too much.
No, dude, it's sick. It's way better than the Ice Palace bullcrap boss level that they have in the first one.
What are you talking about, Ice Palace boss level? You think about Logan's Run?
No.
Like, what movie
are you
thinking about?
Is that Destroyer 2?
Yes, that's in Destroyer.
Well, that part sucks, but the rest of the movie is pretty cool. Well, but when he throws the sword into him and he's like, ugh, and falls out, that's rad.
But my point is, The Mummy is very much one of the most competent rekindlings of an old Universal property, yes, that had ever been done, because
it's a remake that you can be happy about.
Yeah, because they captured the spirit of what these adventure movies used to be. These adventure movies are purely escapism, bubblegum, fun things that Marvel tried to do with these comic book movies, but it just got overly soggy and stupid. But whereas a movie like The Mummy, it still has this sense of adventure, and Egypt is such a perfect location for that. You get that sort of, you know, there is historical authenticity, you know, Egypt was real and pharaohs were real and all this kind of stuff was real. And it's like, what if you get that kind of Harry Potter if magic? Like, well, maybe there is like a tomb of, you know, the lost city of wherever's where this guy did, you know, and it helps you get lost in this tale, and it holds up. Some of the CGI, obviously, it's 1999. They did a really great job with Imhotep, because I remember watching I Am Legend with Will Smith like almost 10 years later, and all the zombies looked just like Imhotep, and I was like, you guys couldn't do better than this. But, you know, some of the scarab effects and things, CGI, what they were using at the time, still feels extremely dated watching it on a big screen, but it does not detract from how fun that movie is. And the music, my God. Back when they made a film score that got you hype. Mm. Like, you know, I really blame Hans Zimmer for kind of fucking up everything when it comes. Yeah, fuck you, Hans. Like, I'm gonna say it. Like, you know, the moment he kind of, I think the last big Hans Zimmer score that was fantastic was probably Pirates of the Caribbean. And once he got on board with this sort of Christopher Nolan, boom, 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 like all that nonsense. Like, most film scores now are not memorable whatsoever. And this movie does it. Bezel asked why we're talking about this.
25th anniversary.
It's the 25th anniversary, and I just saw it in theaters yesterday. So that was the movie I saw in theaters. That's why we're talking about it.
We had Alien 45th and Mummy 25th in the theater.
And it's true. And cool. Dina says on Twitch, yeah, but his pirate score borrowed heavily from his score from The Rock. And it's true. Like, I'm saying that the Pirates of the Caribbean score was like the last kind of score feeling score that just had some weight where you wanted to listen to that where it stood out, where you're like, you know what, I would like to listen to this music to get myself excited or put myself into a mindset. And it's one of those things that I feel like is a lost art in a lot of movies now, is getting something that really is transportive and really has a great film score. And you know, I'm a huge film score person. I wish that I could do more film score shit for you, but since this is a podcast, we can't play music for more than 3 seconds without getting copyright infringement. We were playing some of the Big Trouble in Little China music earlier in the Twitch pre-show because Twitch is not so so mean about it.
They were for a minute. Video game music shut it down.
But 25th anniversary of The Mummy was a lot of fun, and I'm really happy that I got to see that on a big screen. And I encourage people to revisit that movie and it's funny because I love revisiting old movies like this in a large format, because sometimes movies at the time that we maybe watched 10 or 15 years ago and we're like, God, that was so cheesy, we have been completely bombarded for the next 15 or 20 years with really high budget garbage, like just mind numbing garbage. And then you go back and you look at something that you might have thought was kind of dumb at the time and go, damn, compared to what we're getting fed now, this was art. And it just kind of shows like the unwinding and spiraling of quality that just keeps happening the more we overly franchise and reboot and requel and sequel and prequel and universe and all this kind of stuff, that it just all gets away with us. Beelzebub Ding Dong says, it's also the 25th anniversary of The Sixth Sense, but I didn't know they released that crap in the theaters again, too. Anything to make a buck, you know? And the thing about Signs or Sixth Sense is you can only really watch it once.
I mean, it's still fun.
It's kind of like The Game.
Except for the part where the girl, like, throws up under the blanket, or the woman comes screaming with her wrist. I don't like those two parts. Those two parts can piss off. I don't want them.
James over on Facebook said he watched Tailspin today. Didn't know how good we had it. You know, Tailspin was a great show. Ho, 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 ho. Let's begin. Do-do-do-do, do-do-do-do-do. Yeah. Tailspin, ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba, what another tailspin. Hit it. Ho, 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 ho. Come on, Jake. You're supposed to, like, tune in. You jump in when you know it.
I tell you what, I did not have...
It was Baloo?
I didn't have Disney Channel growing up.
Well, and, you know, Tailspin was another really good way of expanding a universe. They didn't just go, you know what, we're going to make more Jungle Book bullshit. They're like, we're going to make Baloo a Caribbean smuggler and put him in a plane.
Totally different Baloo, though.
And then they're going to get Shere Khan, and he's going to be the CEO of this evil corporation. He's going to have the snake there with him because they're bad guys and corporations are bad guys, even though this is a show produced by corporations. But, you know, and they're like, that's how you do it. You know, give us the characters we love and make them smugglers in the Caribbean. Like, that's... But that would be appropriative. We can't use the Caribbean. Sorry, yeah. That's a topic from the pre-show.
90s Disney was pretty cool because Chip and Dale, you had Indiana Jones and Magnum P.I. as chipmunks.
Oh, dude, yeah. I mean, the Magnum P.I. Was the coolest shirt ever. So somebody's up there saying that your Steven Summerguy directed The Jungle Book 94. And, yeah, I actually liked that movie.
The one with Jason Lee?
With Jason Lee, yeah. And Carrie Ells and Sam Neill and Lena Headey and John Cleese and Fleming. And
hold on.
Dude.
I don't remember any of them being there, but that was because...
the 94 Jungle Book was good,
I
man.
Own it on VHS. Because
it was
a
new story.
I haven't watched it since... VHS was like a way to watch things. Lena Headey was in it.
Yeah, this is a good movie, man.
I just remember Jason Lee being rad.
Well, yeah, and it was a different storytelling. It wasn't just the same old shit like the newer Jungle Books are like. Let's just tell the story about Mowgli being a kid. You know, dude, Jungle Book 94 was a very good movie. I watched it as a child.
Sam Neill, a bad guy in it.
I think yes. I think he was one of the and Carrie Ells was a bad guy too. You know, I mean, everybody but Mowgli was kind of a bad guy because you know Mowgli had the art, and it also wasn't full of CGI animals talking
and like, real animals. That's the one thing is King Louie was like a regular orangutan,
and Shere Khan was an actual tiger. And you know that was what was cool about the Jungle Book is people Steven Summers again yes trying to say that like that was a bad thing. I'm telling you, Adventures of Huck Finn, pretty good. The Mummy, pretty freaking good. I'm almost at a camp to where I'm gonna say Van Helsing by today's standards was pretty freaking good.
Dude, well, talking about jungle action, it has Frankenstein do the Tarzan swing all the way across that gorge
and caught like a syringe of Mr. Hyde juice. I hated that movie so much.
That movie's so ridiculous.
I wanted to love that movie so much because it's like very relevant to my interests. But I feel like there was a point in the mid-2000s or the 2004-2005 where Steven Summers was getting a lot of money to do a lot of terrible things because he had knocked some shit out of the absolute park in the 90s, right? And so once the 2000s hit, they're like, okay, dude, do all this stuff. And then, you know, he's directing these things, but studios are saying, but also. And then you get G.I. Joe, which he directed that, and that was arguably a piece of shit, but look at how much money it made. And but he has not directed anything in a long time, but he is in development to write and direct a new movie called When Worlds Collide that does not quite have a date yet, but he has not directed a movie since 2013. It was Odd Thomas, which wasn't a fantastic movie. You can see it. I really like it, but mainly because it has Anton Yelchin in it. It's a fun movie. It suffers from budgetary restrictions because it is a pretty weird idea, but they just needed more money to really make that movie fly. But it does have Willem Dafoe and Anton Yelchin, and I Anton Yelchin was one of those guys. If we can get some up and comer emojis in the deal, he was taken away way too soon. I think he was going to have an incredible career ahead of himself. He didn't get crushed by that Jeep. But
he was in some really good movies.
He's a
like lower budget guy.
Like Green
indie
Room.
Release type movies.
Green Room was fantastic. If you've never seen Green Room, amazing performance from Anton Yelchin. Only Lovers Left Alive, like fantastic vampire film with Anton Yelchin. What's another one that he was in that I really, really like? I mean, Odd Thomas, obviously, the remake of Fright Night. He was very good in that. I just, you know, and he was one of the better parts of the Star Trek remake. He was.
There was no good parts.
He was good. He was good. He was Chekhov. He will. You know what? To Anton, I'm gonna just pour one out for Anton.
Pour one in.
I'm pouring one in for Anton. But anyway. Getting me on a Steven Summers train. The Mummy rules. And that's all I got to say about that. Beelzebub ding dong.
Yeah, the first movie, the first Mummy is really good. The second one's a lot of fun. Those little, like, stone, like, statue dudes with the bow and arrows that are, like, attacking them and everything. And I
think that's the third one.
No, that's the second one.
Is that the second
that's
one?
That's the second one. And then, because there's not a
lot. Oh, you're talking about the Egyptian ones. I thought you were talking about in the third one where it's, like, the stone army of, like,
No, the little, like, the guys that are, like, a foot tall. Like
They
come out of the hillside.
Well, they're, like, the movie Trilogy of Terror, the little Zuni dolls. Like the, you know.
Stuff like that. Yeah.
Okay, well, there you have it. Let's talk about the box office roundup, because it is about that time of the show where we need to tell you what's going on, and it's starting to get very warm here in the studio again. We are getting in the middle of the summer, and like I just got a new bulb for our fancy new gigantic lava lamp. It's going to get even hotter up in here during the summer. Can't wait. But what we do at the end of the show is we tell you the box office roundup for the last weekend, April 26th through 28th. Jake's going to give you probably the number, there's top 10, but we got a couple that we want to mention, I think. And most of these are domestic numbers because that's the numbers that matter to producers and everything. So, I'm going to hand it over to Jake, but I want to mention number 14.
Yeah, we can start there actually, because there's some interesting things below the top 10. So at number 14, opening in the 14th spot from Universal, the movie you just talked about, in its 25th anniversary re-release, The Mummy brought in just over $1 million.
Three nights. Only played for three nights. That's pretty cool, man.
Yep. Just over $1 million in 1,200 theaters. Averaged $830 per screen. So good for it. And then at number 13, Spy X Family Code White anime movie, still hanging in there pretty not too far away, brought in $1.1 million in 2 weeks, has brought in $7 million for Crunchyroll. So that's good for animation and foreign films and whatever it is. And then Monkey Man is still out there too in number 12, brought in $1.1 million. It's brought in almost $24 million in its month out so far. We
honestly surprised it made that much.
I am too, for something that's just been sitting in a can waiting for streaming release. It's out there if you want to watch it still. 1,500 theaters still have a hold of it. It'll be out on streaming, if not out already. I'm pretty sure you can get it VOD. Not worth paying $20 for on VOD, heads up. And then at number 11, the Alien anniversary release, 45th
anniversary.
$1.5 million on this Walt Disney Studio picture. Alien, that's so weird. Ripley is, or I guess the Alien Queen, something out there. Ripley's daughter, the Alien creature, I guess, is a Disney princess, the one that has its butthole sucked into space. So there's that. But then coming in at number 10, opening at the number 10 spot.
This makes me sad.
Boy Kills World.
It did not get advertised enough.
No, I didn't know about it until last week.
I have a feeling that this was going to get a cult, like a John Wick treatment, where no one watched it because they didn't know about it, and then it's going to hit streaming, and then it's going to get really big, and everyone's going to go, oh my God, this is so crazy.
Yeah. But just under $1.7 million brought in by it. It's in under 2,000 theaters there.
Yeah.
It might be something that, a lot of people watch on streaming. I'm sure as soon as it's on
I'm gonna try it and
the
see
Netflix homepage, that'll be something people watch. And then at number 9, Dune Part 2, still hanging in there. $2 million brought in by it in its ninth week out. $280 million in the U.S., it's probably brought in all the dollars across the world. Oh, it has. Another $424 million, bringing it to $704 total globally. And then just above it at number 8, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. This is one I'm surprised to see is still in the top 10.
Yes.
But there hasn't been anything to make it go away. 6 weeks out from Sony, $3.25 million brought in by it. 107 in the U.S., only 188 total globally. Yeah.
Not a big global following for the Ghostbusters.
Yeah, that might not be enough to make them any kind of money there.
I don't think so.
And then at number 7, Kung Fu Panda 4 in its 8th week. Wow. 3.6 million brought in by it, 185 million in the US total, another 319 million across the world.
Jeez.
$503 million globally. Who would have thought the 4th film in Kung Fu Panda would continue to make money? That's crazy to me. And then above it, at number 6, this one's kind of a bummer.
Well, and they're also classifying this now as a flop.
Yes, I saw that.
Which sucks, which means it's only going to make less money when people start calling it a flop.
Yeah, as soon as they say that, yeah. In its 2nd week out, Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, $3.8 million brought in by that one, totaling only 15.4 at the box office in the U.S., only another 500,000 across the world, so under 16 million globally. And I wonder, too, how much this has been impacted with all of the Warhammer stuff that's going on right now.
With Henry Cavill?
Well, yeah, kind of with Henry Cavill, because Games Workshop changed the lore of the Custodes, which is famously the army that Henry Cavill is a big fan of. And reportedly, that's because Amazon Studios is pushing part of their equality movement narrative onto Games Workshop, because Amazon Studios requires that all of the people that are involved or participating with them meet the same standards as Amazon. Okay. So they've introduced female custodes. The Adeptus Custodes have a female member now, which they've never had since their introduction in 1986-87.
Basil Bubba Ding Dong on Twitch goes, are they like an army of janitors?
Custodians? They're exactly that.
They clean up the bullshit.
So despite that, they have the Sisters of Silence with them, which are exclusively female. They just put a line in the new codex that said that there's female custodes. And then when asked about it, they're like, what about the lore? That's never been the case and all this. Games Workshop response was, they've always been there. Deal with it. Screw you. And the entire fan base is pissed about how that's gone over, instead of them adopting new lore and finding a way to make it work, if that's what they were going to do, or adhering to lore. And a big part of that, you know, Henry Cavill is part of the Amazon thing. He's supposed to have some control there. So anyhow, I wonder how much that is an impact on this movie.
Who knows?
Moving on, there's a lot of Warhammer crap online. If you get into it right now, it's bad news. At number 5, Abigail, in its 2nd week, dropping from the number 2 spot.
Rapid drop. It was a little more than I thought it was going
to
be.
5.2 brought in this week, bringing it up to $18.75 million, $28.5 million across the globe. I wonder how that is on that movie. You know, it's a horror movie, mm-hmm. so I wonder what the budget was on it. Probably not too many shooting location fees or anything.
It was
that,
in a house.
Yeah, we'll see where that one goes. At number 4, dropping from the top spot, Civil War, in its 3rd week out.
That is a big drop.
7 million, but it was in top spot. Well, it didn't open in top spot, but it climbed up to the top spot. But in its 3rd week out, $7 million estimated on that one. They're still figuring out its numbers. So 56.2 total for that one, around 72 worldwide, another 16
which
million
I didn't think
world.
It would get a whole lot of international dollars, because it's very America centric. But yeah, there you go.
And then at number 3, holding strong at the 3rd spot, Godzilla X-Kong, 7.2 million brought in by it. 5 weeks out, $182 million. I think it's continued to make more money across the world. Yeah, over half a billion dollars globally.
It's so much. Bless
me, everybody. And then above it, opening at the number 2 spot, Unsung Hero. I don't know what that movie is.
Is that a
faith-based movie?
It's one of those. A mom's faith stands against all odds and inspires her husband and children to hold on to their faith. But yeah, there it is. Making some money.
$7.75 million brought in by a faith-based movie from Lionsgate, though.
Putting it out there.
Non-faith studio. And then opening at the top spot in a piss-poor, pitiful week, only $15 million was able to gain the top spot challengers, which also brought another $10 million across the world. So $25 million brought in by that one in its opening week. So I've seen nothing but them be like, wow, it's crushing it.
Dang, bless you, sir.
Sorry, everybody. But $25 million is not a lot of dollars.
I mean, no, not really. I'm just happy to see that The Mummy made it into the number 14 spot. You know, I mean, it's funny because by modern standards, I mean, it made $400 million worldwide in its initial release, which is pretty damn good for a movie in the 90s. But yeah, another million in that. So, but this week I want to definitely try and see Boy Kills World. I'm going to try and maybe see that next week, or not next week. Tomorrow, because I don't think it's going to survive another weekend at the box office, especially if we have like two or three more movies coming out in theaters.
Yeah.
I think it's going to get dropped because it's not even in a whole 2,000 movies nationwide or 2,000 movie theaters nationwide. So. It is from Roadside Attractions, which is not a big distribution house, so we'll see. But that is your that's your box office. So there you go.
There you go.
All right, guys. Well, that is our show. If you want to jump over into the Discord, link is in the comments. Vince is down to host our 100-minute movies. I don't know what the movie is tonight, but it's always 100 minutes, and it's always generally pretty good because we've filtered these through rigorous thumbs-upness, I guess, from people that know what good movies are supposed to be. So stick around for that or on our Discord. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever it is you prefer. We like Twitch, but we are on Facebook and YouTube as well, and you can download the audio version of this podcast wherever it is you download your podcast. And with that said, I think that's it, unless you got anything else, Jake.
That's all I got.
All right. Well, we will see you guys next. Oh, Night of the Demons? Hang on a second. Night of the Demons is tonight? That's a good movie, you guys. That's a good movie. It's schlocky. It's stupid. It's fun. That's going to be over in our Discord soon as we end the show. Oh, man. Y'all are in for a treat. That's a... We did that one in a schlock cinema once years ago. That's a good one. So, anyway. All right. We're out of here. We'll see you guys next week. Ta-ta.
As you leave the theater, folks, please be careful. Don't let this happen to your car. Be sure to remove the speaker before you leave. If you should accidentally pull a speaker loose, please turn it in at our snack bar or box office. Thank you.